rocks. I can't believe this whole war's been about rocks. Gems. Coal. Rarity said something about a meteorite, but she got all evasive when she realized I'd overheard. Whatever. Like it was hard to figure out. Sometimes I'm slow, but I'm not stupid. Dumb rocks. I used to think rocks were cool. I mean, my big sister has gems for a cutie mark, and Pinkie Pie once lived on a rock farm. We even used to play a game, Scootaloo and Apple Bloom and me. We found the rock that Rarity had gotten her cutie mark from, and I made Twilight Sparkle enchant it so we could make it open and close. She kinda owed us for that whole smarty pants thing. We called it the Rock of Destiny, and we pretend that when it opened up, it'd give us our cutie marks. Twilight made it so we could each set a passphrase to open it. Mine was Dumb Rock, so I could pretend I was just like my sister. I changed it to Apple Pie for a while, but then I changed it back. Just as well. My sister and I haven't been Apple Pie in a long time. Not since the Ministries, at least. I hope you don't mind me using your place. I mean, you can't mind. But I hope you don't anyways. Sometimes I just have to get away from all the noise. It's so nice and peaceful here, and I really love your flowers. Anyway, I guess I'm thinking about rocks because we found chunks of that meteorite when we dug into Luna's old foundry under the castle last week. It was all broken up because they'd taken all the ore out of it, and they'd sealed the pieces up. I felt kinda sorry for it. Ponies and zebras blame it for all sorts of stupid stuff. It's not the rock's fault. It's just a rock. And I kinda know what it's like being blamed for stuff. It seems like sometimes everything I do just makes things worse. So I had to make one of the bigger chunks into a cornerstone, as an apology or something, I don't know. Make it feel useful. Yeah, I know that's stupid, it's just a rock. So I guess not dumb rocks, just dumb ponies and zebras. I came up here yesterday. Building the last stable in Everfree was my idea, so I wanted to be here. Especially after we started having problems. Rarity said that Everfree Forest is one of the places she was sure the zebras wouldn't attack, so I thought, why are we putting all the stables in places we think they will attack? Doesn't it make sense to put at least one somewhere they won't? Yeah, the forest is dangerous, but it can't be that dangerous. You lived here, and my sister and her friends used to come in here all the time. Well, just another one of my ideas that ended up a mess. Apple Bloom had warned me about the poison joke, but was it always this aggressive? It's been really bad the last 3 days. Moonbeam said it's like the excavation is attracting it. He thinks that either it's vibrosensitive, which isn't even a word, or it wants to be near people, but that doesn't make any sense. It's a plant, right? But then Apple Bloom says you told her the plants want to laugh. How can a plant want something? I'm sorry, I know I'm rambling. I guess my thoughts aren't too coherent. I'm just trying to work things out. I think we've lost our faith. Does that make sense? It's like everything we're supposed to believe in has gone dark and crumbled. Like the air is heavy. No, that doesn't make sense. Like, I don't know, like everything is too real. You know, like when you're just a filly and you look up to someone and they're your idol. But then you learn they're not as perfect as you imagined, that they're flawed, just like every pony else. Maybe that's just growing up, though. It's like we've forgotten how to have heroes, only worse. We've forgotten how to believe in each other, in ponies. Even Scootaloo, she's trying to fix ponies with all these experiments. I once told Scootaloo I thought she was trying to make ponies like they were when we were kids. You know what she said? She said, nostalgia is just make-believe. Isn't that horrible? I've started having second thoughts. Maybe we should just stick to saving ponies. Maybe it's not right to try and fix things. But then, won't it be for nothing, like Scootaloo says? I don't know anymore. Sometimes these experiments feel, I don't know, wrong. I know they're not dangerous. We made extra sure. But I still don't feel right doing experiments on ponies who are just trying to survive. Isn't that wrong? It's not like it's their fault. Not most of them, anyways. Well, the ones in Stable 1, maybe. I just want to save them and give them a chance. Kind of like the rocks, I guess. I even almost told Rarity about the experiments. But I didn't. Because, well, I'd be betraying Scootaloo and Applebloom if I told. And I'm not sure Rarity would do the right thing if I told her. I really don't like the Ministry of Image. And if that's what she is now... Like I said before, we haven't been apple pie in a long time. Sometimes the little statue of Rarity that my sister gave me feels more like my sister than she does. Today, I did ask Scootaloo if Stable 101 could be made a control stable instead, but she and Applebloom both insisted the experiment here was too important. And part of me thinks that Scootaloo is still right. Like, maybe we really do have to fix ponies. To figure out what went wrong so everything doesn't get so bad again. But how many times do we have to try before we get it right? And what happens when we fail? This time the cost could be so much more than tree sap and pine needles. Scootaloo's been looking at me funny. I think maybe she knows I'm having second thoughts. Anyway, sorry for all the rambling. Thanks for letting me use your place, and thanks for listening. Applebloom was right. You really are a good person to talk to, Zecora. We're all very, very sad about what happened to you. I hope you're at peace.
You better look at this. We all stared upwards, our eyes lifted above the dark silhouettes of the forest trees. The sky was a cloudy haze that glowed a hellish orange, lit from the fires that stretched for miles below. Our gazes were fixed on the mass of black shadow slowly moving through the ever-free fire sky, brilliant flashes of lightning erupting along its sides. It was moving towards us, but we were not its destination. The overcast. This was a day too soon. Goddesses damn him, Colonel Autumn Leaf was jumping the whistle on his own attack plan. My brother's on that ship. Calamity's tone was dour. I pranced in agitation. This was not good. Why the hell would he? A sudden wave of weariness passed over me. It had been far too long and a far too rough day. I needed sleep. I wasn't going to get it, though. Above us, more lightning flashed as the four raptors moored to the overcast began to pull away, their smaller thunderclouds pulling free of the Thunderhead warship's massive ones. Two of them began to move ahead, while the other two flanked the mobile siege platform.
Okay, I said, spinning around and addressing the others. Change of plans.
I looked over to the ponies, and Griffin, who had followed me this far. Part of me dreaded what I was about to say, but part of me knew that it would somehow be this way.
We'll have to split up.
Before any pony could protest, I explained.
The Enclave is moving on the Cathedral right now. They'll be there in, what, a few hours?
I looked to Calamity, who nodded at my assessment.
And we can't all go. Xana shouldn't be moved anymore, especially not after Lifebloom uses his spell.
With a grudging reluctance, I added,
And neither should the Hellhound.
Velvet Ramony agreed quietly, staring back at her patients. Lifebloom was moving about Xanath's bed, preparing to cast his trepanation spell.
Lifebloom and I need to stay,
she intoned, sparing me the task of saying it. She smiled sadly to Calamity.
And you, love, need to go.
Pyrolite, I instructed.
Keep them safe.
The Balefire Phoenix hooted, perching up straight and giving me a one-winged salute.
I don't know if I can do this, Calamity admitted. After all he's done, after all the pony's dead, I know Autumn needs to be put down, but I don't think I can.
He looked at me, his eyes wide and hurting.
My own brother.
I remembered Pride's change after learning the Enclave had marked Calamity for death. That, in fact, Autumn Leaf, his own brother, had ordered my best friend's execution.
Yeah, then it's a good thing you're taking me with you, Reggie said flatly.
Velvet Remedy gave a pained look.
It's a hard thing going against kin, Reggie said. to take down your own brother. I don't think I could have done it. Not if Cage had been bad. Nobody blames you for not taking the shot.
Calamity watched her check the load on her guns. Guns he had custom made for the adolescent Griffin.
If it helps you at all, you'll be putting a stop to his murdering ways even still.
It struck me that Reggie viewed those guns as a stand-in for Calamity, a way for him to be part of what he needed to be, but couldn't, much in the same way she carried Cage's blades.
"So, little Pip, what's the plan?" Calamity asked. "How the hell are we supposed to make it through miles of fire and whatever else the Everfree's keeping in his back pocket and get to Red Eye's base before they do?"
"We don't,"
I answered him simply. I raised a hoof to the sky, pointing towards the overcast.
"We're gonna hitch a ride on that."
Calamity, Reggie, and I made our preparations while Lifebloom's horn glowed and he tried to work a miracle. We didn't have a lot of time. We wanted to give the overcast enough time to pass us by, but not enough to move out of sight.
"This is a stealth mission," I proclaimed, wincing at the groans. "Hey, we've got this one in the bag. We've got 2 stealth cloaks now," I pointed out, counting the albino hellhound's cloak along with Zenith's. "And I have the advanced stealth buck."
"Which only works for a few hours,"
Velvet Remedy warned.
"True, but we shouldn't need it even for that," I suggested. "Once we get up there, we'll snag a set of Enclave magically powered armor for Calamity, and I'll take his cloak."
"Ah, crap," Calamity muttered.
He dipped his head, tossing off his hat.
"Can't be bringing this, then."
He stared at his trusty black desperado hat. Half of it was badly burned from the buccaneer blaze. To be honest, it no longer really looked right on his head. In fact, it made me wince, remembering how painfully he had been hurt.
"I love that hat."
"I'll take care of it until you get back,"
Velvet Remedy promised, her words carrying a subtle insistence that he would come back. Brilliant scarlet light flashed over Zenith, then settled in a halo about her head, making her look like a sleeping angel. I remembered how she'd looked with bat-like wings the day I'd saved her daughter. The mental images combined strangely. Lifebloom was sweating, straining in focused concentration. Calamity dumped the contents of his saddlebag, which I swear took up more space in the hut than the saddlebags could possibly have held, and had apparently come to include several bottles and jars of desiccated herbs and dust that Calamity had scavenged from the hut itself, insisting that he wanted to travel light.
"You won't fight your brother, but you'll be taking as much off his ship as you can carry, won't you?"
"Yep."
Reggie, meanwhile, had decided she was as ready as she could be, and was leaning on the doorway smoking another cigarette. Velvet Remedy huffed at her.
"Yeah, right," Reggie said with a roll in her eyes. "I shouldn't smoke. Might burn down the forest or something like that."
"You could at least show some respect for your health,"
Velvet commented. Reggie just lifted an eyebrow, then waved a wing in the direction of the ponies she had chosen to assist, particularly me.
"Yeah, 'cause I'm well known for making healthy choices, right?"
Velvet opened her muzzle, a retort on her tongue, then closed it again as a look of heartbreaking defeat blanketed her body.
"It's already too late, isn't it?"
"What about me smoking or following you lot?"
Reggie blew a smoke ring.
"Way I see it, if I quit, it'd be like saying I made a mistake and insisting on lending a wing. And that'd be like saying Cage made a mistake. And well, that just ain't gonna happen."
But Velvet wasn't talking about Reggie's life choices. She turned to me with a horrified look.
"Little Pip, please, be honest."
Her voice was fragile.
"The fire. How long before it reaches Fluttershy?"
She swallowed hard.
"It's already there, isn't it? She's already dead. Or...
My lovely unicorn friend could not bring herself to say that Fluttershy was dying. But it was clear from the pain in her expression that she was imagining Fluttershy, burning alive slowly in utter agony. It was too cruel an end for too cruel a life. I couldn't bring myself to say that, by my best estimate, the fire had been there since nightfall. Maybe it was the corrupted kindness to be dishonest about this, but I just couldn't tell the truth. It would destroy her. I opened my muzzle to lie, but I was interrupted before I could manage the first word. "Doesn't matter," Reggie told her, drawing stares and glares from everyone except Lifebloom, who was too deep in concentration to notice his surroundings. Velvet stared, muzzle open, her heart tearing apart in front of us.
"What?"
Reggie looked taken aback.
"Oh, wait a second."
She looked at us all.
"You all really don't know."
"Know what?" Calamity said carefully.
"The fire ain't burning the trees," Reggie announced.
My jaw was not the only one to drop. She looked at us all and shook her head.
"Hells, it'd be easier if I just showed you. I don't think you'd believe me otherwise."
"What do you mean the fire isn't burning the trees?"
"I mean exactly what I said," Reggie replied. "I got a good look after y'all ran off and left me half dead in that tree."
As she said that, her voice was not accusatory. If anything, she sounded amused.
"Red Eye's fire brigade pushed past my position. Saw 'em hose down a moss-covered tree with one of their flamethrowers. I swear on my mother's name that the flames went right through that tree like it wasn't even there."
But...
Velvet's voice betrayed her desperation.
"But we saw the trees burning. When we were fighting the Wonderbolts, remember?"
She looked at me, and I could sense that she wanted me to tell her it was just her imagination, that Reggie was right, and there was nothing to worry about. I thanked Luna that this time I didn't need to lie.
"Those trees were burning because of that trick Skydive pulled," I reminded her. "That wasn't from Red Eye's fires."
Calamity shook his head, looking at Regina.
"And you didn't mention this before."
"Well, hells, I thought you all knew. Besides, I was totally focused on the rest of the freaky."
The Griffin tossed her cigarette to the floor and ground it under a hind paw.
"The tree didn't catch, but the moss on it sure ignited. Then it began to heave and thrash and tear itself off the tree even as it burnt up. I swear it looked like it was screaming. I think I'm gonna have nightmares for weeks."
"Well, damn," Calamity whistled.
"The fire isn't burning. Fluttershy's safe?"
Warring emotions racked Velvet Remedy.
Yeah, I think so,"
I murmured, my eyes going wide as the gears in my mind started turning again. I had seen the reports of Red Eye's research into bypass spells. His scientists had been working to apply a bypass to some sort of weapon effect. The full details had been redacted after the research had been successful. Zenith had told me she had worked in one of the buildings where they were creating flamethrower fuel, but I'd never put the two together.
"At least for now."
"For now?"
Velvet's voice was small, but hopeful.
"Red Eye ain't the sort to waste resources, is he, little Pip?"
Calamity asked, clearly following my train of thought.
"He's cleansing the Everfree Force, but he ain't gonna burn down the trees. He wants the lumber."
I nodded. I could see a calculating light in Velvet's eyes. Her quest now had a timeline that she could see. Zenith had to recover, and they had to brew a remedy that would save Fluttershy before Red Eye's forces finished burning the forest and proceeded far enough in their harvesting to reach the top of Killing Joke Hill.
"You want this?"
The Hellhound interrupted abruptly, holding up his zebra stealth cloak, his bindings laying useless around him.
"You're not getting it unless you give me something back."
There was a dangerous glint in his eyes.
"And what do you want in return for your generous offer?"
Velvet asked diplomatically as she pointedly looked at the stump of a leg which she had treated and dressed.
"Them claw blades,"
the Hellhound barked, pointing at Cage's Hellhound claw knives strapped in Reggie's belt.
"Oh, hells no!"
The young griffin flew almost within claw reach of the hellhound, guns drawn, before she was yanked short, her tail in Calamity's teeth.
"These are my brothers."
"I figured they belonged to one of our brothers before him," the hellhound growled back, unimpressed and vicious.
"Now just hold on here."
Calamity came as close to shouting as he could without letting Reggie's tail out of his mouth.
"I figure we can shoot you and have both."
He shifted, pointing his battle saddle at the hellhound. Being an amputee had not made him any less dangerous. The albino hellhound was swifter than any of us expected. He had an arm around Velvet Remedy, his claws sharp enough and strong enough to slice metals right against her face. Their barest touch was drawing blood. Velvet eeped sharply.
"How fast?" he challenged coldly.
I levitated little Macintosh in front of me.
"Let her go, real gentle, or you are so amazingly dead it won't matter."
Astonishingly, the crippled hellhound stared down the five guns pointed at him and didn't blink. Velvet's horn flashed. The hellhound dropped limply back onto his bed, one of his claws sliding across Velvet's face as his hand fell away. Blood gushed from the wound, staggering her.
"Don't shoot him,"
she ordered, as she stumbled back, holding a hoof to her face. The claw had barely missed slicing open one of her eyes.
"Little Pip, your spell, please."
We had used up all the healing bandages and potions that we had. There was nothing left to aid Velvet with but that dark spell I had been granted by the Black Book. Once again, I let myself draw on that knowledge to create a cast from Velvet's own blood, wrapping half her head in a ruddy mask. Calamity rushed to Velvet's side, shoring her up. He growled at the hellhound, and clearly, really, really wanted to shoot the monster. But Velvet wouldn't let him. Instead, she turned to her attacker and spoke with a touch of sympathy.
"I can agree with how abhorrent it is that some ponies have made weapons out of your kind's body parts."
She stared at us with the one eye not hidden under solidified blood.
"And any pony here who doesn't should try to imagine seeing a creature wielding a weapon made of pony hooves."
Addressing the extremely pissed-looking albino again.
"So, in trade for the use of your cloak, we are giving you this."
Her horn glowed again, and Zenith's hellhound claw helmet floated over to rest upon the albino hellhound's chest, ignoring the strangled sound of protest from Calamity.
"But you will not be taking Cage Grimfeather's blades from Regina," she added sternly. "I am sorry."
She frowned.
"And for your aggression, you will be spending the rest of our time together under the effects of this spell. It is never intelligent to attack your doctor."
Velvet Remedy stepped away. Then her knees gave a little tremble. A moment later, she had dropped to them, breathing heavily and letting her panic wash over her now that the crisis had passed. Calamity laid down next to her and held her, nuzzling her gently. She buried her face in his mane, shedding tears born from the roller coaster of hope, despair, and mortal danger that the last few minutes had thrown my friend through. The scarlet glow faded, and Lifebloom staggered, slumping to the floor next to Zenith. Pulling her muzzle out of Calamity's orange mane, Velvet Remedy immediately bombarded Lifebloom with questions about how it went. The only answer he could give was a weak,
"We shall see. It's up to her now."
"Then she'll pull through,"
Velvet proclaimed, her breathing still a little shaky. She seemed to draw strength from caring for her friends.
"Zenith's a survivor, a fighter, and more than you could possibly know."
I discovered I was smiling. Just a little. Somewhere, some pony gave what sounded like a polite cough. I caught Reddy's movement out of the corner of my eye. She drew her guns at the speed of Rainbow Dash and had the twins pointed out the doorway in front of her.
"We got company,"
she warned, growling. Damn it. I was so hoping the Enclave would pass Zecora's hut without taking interest. I really didn't want this fight right now. Velvet moaned. Behind me, Lifebloom was trying to get up, but he was too exhausted to stand, barely able to keep his eyes open. "Enclave?" he asked. Firelight swept across the room to perch on Reggie's head, glaring at the door with her.
"Nah," Reggie said, wincing at Firelight's talons. "Red Eye, one of his damn sprite bots."
True, it made sense he'd have some wandering this close to his home base. But I heard no music.
"Watcher!"
"Wait,"
I called out, waving.
"Hold your fire. This might be a friendly one."
Thunder rumbled overhead like the steady beat of war drums. The overcast was passing directly above us, the massive siege platform blocking out the fiery light reflecting off of the clouds of smoke. The flowers ringing Zecora's hut seemed to shed even more beautiful bioluminescence in the deeper darkness. Colonel Autumn Leaf was either oblivious to our presence, or he was too focused now to care.
"It's been a long time since my home felt crowded," Watcher was saying.
With the mechanical monotone of the sprite bot, I couldn't tell if he was pleased or complaining. "At least half of the people you asked me to gather up have already arrived."
"Huh?" Calamity blinked. "Lil Pip, you asked him to do what now?"
"We don't have time," I told my Pegasus friend bluntly. "The Enclave is moving too fast. I can't be everywhere at once."
Truth was, I was about to ask even more of Spike. And he wasn't going to like it.
"Don't you mean we?"
Calamity asked pointedly. My little pony scowled at me and virtually grabbed my head, making me nod apologetically.
"Yes, but that's kind of the point," I offered lamely. "We need every ally we can get if we're going to pull this off."
"I know you still haven't filled us in on exactly what this plan of yours is," Calamity groused. "I'm trusting there's a good reason for that."
"There is," I assured him.
"Yeah, great reason. You would try to stop me if you knew."
"In the meantime, I've asked Watcher to contact all the people we know who can help and start bringing them together."
"And I'm afraid I have some bad news," Watcher said through the sprite bot.
"One of your guests isn't going to be able to make it."
I felt an icy cold wash through my mane. The obvious implication was that someone had died.
"Who?"
I asked, the little pony in my head suggesting we really didn't want to know.
"What happened?"
"Homage," Watcher said. And all of a sudden, my world plunged out from under me, leaving me in a numbingly cold void.
"Luna, no."
The sensation was as intense as it was brief, dispelled by Watcher's next words.
"And nothing yet. But the Enclave has figured out that DJ Pony is moving from one SPP tower to the other, hacking in to make the broadcasts. And they've started parking raptors above each tower, just waiting for her to make her next move."
"Thank you, Luna. Celestia, please keep her safe."
A huge part of me wanted to dash off to her aid, but doing so could lead the enemy right to her, and I knew she would not approve of me abandoning the good fight just to make it to her side. "Fortunately, the Enclave don't have enough raptors to spare for every tower, and she's not making it easy for them," Watcher explained. "But their dragnet is eventually going to catch her."
"Not if we can help it."
Calamity stepped up beside me, putting a hoof on my head.
"If I know little Pip, this plan of hers is going to pull the heat off of Homage in a big way."
I gave him a worried but thankful smile. He was right about that. We had to win now. We always had to, but now it was for more than just the wasteland. Now I was fighting to keep Homage safe. I realized how horribly selfish it was of me to place the safety of one pony as equal to the needs of tens or even hundreds of thousands of ponies. But I didn't care. Homage was homage, and I was allowed to be just a little selfish when it came to her, wasn't I? "Homage herself insisted she can't make it. She doesn't want to risk drawing the Enclave to the rest of... the Resistance is what she's calling all you guys."
"Resistance Radio."
That's what the Tenpony residents had taken to calling DJ Pony's broadcasts. Clearly, she'd adopted the moniker.
"I'll try to have a sprite bot nearby so she can talk to us," Watcher offered. "And she told me to tell you that she's sending some more allies your way."
"Allies are good. I liked allies. We could use all the friends we could get. Then reality struck me. The blow hit me, cold and sharp and hard, nearly knocking me over. Part of me had been clinging to the belief that I would see Amaj again when I gathered everyone together at Spike's Cave, at that final gathering before I set my plan into action. A final respite before I galloped headlong into my destiny. But Amaj, the one pony I wanted and needed to see the most, was not going to be there. At most, I might hear her voice, speak to her. But she wouldn't be there to touch, to hold, to kiss goodbye. My legs were wet noodles, utterly unable to hold the titanic weight of my breaking heart. I was never going to see Amaj again. With a burst of static, the sprite bot started playing the heavy, ominous music of the Enclave. Watcher was gone. His time was up. I barely noticed, though. I was too busy crying my heart out. The drumming of the overcast thunderclouds was receding. There was no more time. We needed to go. I realized I could still hear the low horns and booming drums, the mournful tones of violins, the music coming from the sprite bot. It hadn't wandered away. It was watching us. I knew that there was no way that Red Eye had been using these things for so long, had been running operations in Philadelphia from a Ministry morale hub, without knowing that these machines could be used to spy. Grim resolve flooded through me, drowning out the agony in my heart. Not killing it, but just letting me not feel it for a while. I pushed myself to my hooves and strode determinedly out to where the sprite bot was floating amongst the trees, still within sight of Zecora's hut. Red Eye knew we were here, knew where to find us. I wanted to make it clear that wasn't necessary. "We're coming," I told the sprite bot, sure that I was all but addressing Red Eye directly. "That's what you wanted, right?" The sprite bot kept playing music. I stared at it for a long minute, possibly two, before turning away in disgust. "Calamity, Reggie, let's go hitch ourselves a ride." I started to walk away from the sprite bot, then stopped. I trotted back around to it, my horn glowing softly as I announced, "Sorry, I have to kill you." This time, however, I wasn't addressing Red Eye, but the sprite bot itself. My pip leg was still dead, and I was going to use the little spy machine to reboot it. My telekinesis opened the repair hatch on the sprite bot and yanked its spark battery out. The sprite bot dropped like a stone, dead. Or at least the robot equivalent of dead. Sitting, I proceeded to disconnect audio and video feeds, then bring it back to life, a robot vegetable. Or something like that. Whatever. Stupid robots making all my metaphors awkward. I looked down at where my pit buck was grotesquely melted into my foreleg. Miserably, I realized that maybe it was for the best that Amaj never saw me again. Let her last memories of me be before the Balefire Bomb, before Canterlot, and before Arbu. Lifebloom approached me as I was rebooting my pip leg. I assumed he was going to offer comfort, or ask a question about Watcher or the Gathering. I preempted the conversation, some pony else on my mind.
"How did you meet Amaj?"
My voice sounded small to me. I didn't have the will to hide the sadness that was leaking from it. Lifebloom paused, then sat down next to me. "The Twilight Society assigned her to me," he told me. "They thought I would be able to connect with her." Leaning forward on his forehooves, Lifebloom gave me the story. When she first gained residency in Tenpony Tower, she was in mourning. She'd lost the mare she loved, and she didn't know she could ever find love again. He smiled gently. "I'm happy to see she was wrong." That only made it hurt worse. My heart was bleeding onto the ground, and I could feel the tears building up behind my eyes. They felt like fire. Even worse, the little pony in my head didn't really want to hear about Amaj's past loves. Of course she had to have had at least one. You can't get to be as good as she was without practice, right? But I liked being able to pretend otherwise, even though I knew better.
even though I was pretty sure I knew who it was. Joke blew. I wasn't going to be jealous. Not of Homage's dead beloved. I refused to be that horrible. We were the same age. I'd suffered loss of my own that the others of the society thought was similar. Lifebloom continued, his tone suggesting that the society was in error on that supposition. He explained, I was kicked out of the Republic after they discovered I had a preference for stallions. I blinked in surprise.
What?
The Republic, I remembered, was the little town that the raiders from Fluttershy's cottage had massacred. A bizarre cult-like group of weirdos, but not bad ponies, according to the Wasteland Crusaders.
They kicked you out because of that?
I was astounded. Since my youth, I had been resigned to my feelings for Maris lowering my prospects for finding love. But I'd never experienced actual prejudice because of it. I couldn't even fathom that.
Why? Why would they even care?
For the same reason I reckon that the Enclave rewards it, Calamity said, approaching us. His words prompting another little, wait, what? From the little pony in my head. Population control. Small places like the Republic, I bet they need as many babies as they can get. Lifebloom nodded, frowning. And if I wasn't going to contribute to the growth of the Republic, I wasn't wanted.
And the Enclave?
I asked, driven by morbid curiosity. My pip leg hung to life, the screen flashing status reports. I brought up my EFS and checked the most critical readouts.
There's only so much cropland above the cloud curtain, all of it around the rain towers. Too many Pegasi means famine. The Enclave keeps real tight reins on childbirth.
Officially, y'all are probably dead already, Calamity had told Tracker and the other Pegasi in New Appaloosa. By the weekend, the Enclave will have delivered condolences and new birth approval certificates to your families.
Being allowed an extra foal is one of the perks a Pegasus gets for enlisting in the Enclave, Calamity admitted. So, while there's nothing official, the Enclave has a little extra appreciation for those officers who won't be taking advantage of that benefit.
I sat and thought about that for a moment, then shook it off like a wet coat.
We really need to go.
I stood up, looking down to Lifebloom.
But when I get back, I'll want to hear everything you can tell me about Homage.
He gave me an odd look.
I'm not prying, I explained. I just miss her.
Within minutes, we were soaring through the smoke. Beneath us, we could see the flames burning through the forest. True to Reggie's claim, the trees were not burning, although occasionally it appeared as if they were, as the moss or vines clinging to them were cremated. We were all wearing scarves to protect us from the worst of the smoke, but it only mitigated the foulness. My lungs burned, my eyes were stinging, it felt hot in my skull. Most of that was from the smoke, but not all of it. I was exhausted, even more so after hearing Watcher's soul-crushing news. It took massive, almost monumental effort just to keep my eyes open.
Foot.
I yelped as something struck my left hind hoof, a lancing pain followed by a burning sensation. I lifted it, spotting a dart-like thorn impaled on the underside of my hoof. The burning increased. Poison.
Foot, 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 foot.
God dang it! Calamity hollered, banking sharply as the air filled with more plant spikes. A patch of forest vegetation was shooting at us. Goddesses, I hated this forest. The plants stopped shooting as the fires reached them. Calamity braved thicker smoke in an effort to keep us out of range of any more of the Everfree's hostile plant life. The fire in my hoof started to climb up my leg, achingly painful. But I'd suffered so much worse. Hell, I'd been set on fire by a dragon. Compared to that, hell, compared to the plethora of hurts from the battle with the Wonderbolts, the plant spike poison was trivial. We were catching up with the overcast, but it was taking time. I held off activating the MG Stealth Buck 2 for fear that it would run out before we had secured a hiding place on the Thunderhead.
I closed my eyes for a few minutes. I was using my levitation to make myself weightless in Calamity's arms. I felt safe there. I could close my eyes for just a minute. I was Rainbow Dash. The clouds were a beautiful white, fluffy and soft underneath of my hooves, and they stretched out forever beneath the warm glow of Celestia's sun. I could see colorful Pegasi flitting and flying about. There was a town nearby, but I wasn't looking at it. I didn't want to. Instead, I looked at the ocean of white that rolled out beneath a canopy of brightest blue. I was Rainbow Dash, and I was not a happy pony. Everywhere under those clouds was Equestria, or what was left of it. Everywhere beneath was a nightmarish hell, where those ponies unfortunate enough not to be in stables and not to be killed in the onslaught were struggling and dying. And I was watching ponies fly about, happily ignoring what was out of sight beneath what some ponies were beginning to call the cloud curtain. It wasn't right. Never mind that all my friends, all of them, were somewhere down there, and I didn't know if they were dead or alive. I couldn't just live up here and pretend Equestria didn't exist anymore. I could understand the temptation, true, but I wasn't that kind of pony, and it hurt more than my heart could bear that apparently the rest of the Pegasi were willing to be. I wanted to be disgusted with all of them. Instead, I just felt sad. I was Rainbow Dash, and I was ashamed to be a Pegasus. If this was what being a Pegasus meant now, well, maybe it was time for me to go. I felt my wings flap, slowly lifting my hooves off the clouds. I loved flying, but today I could barely find the inspiration to lift myself. My head drooped low, my body hanging from my wings like dead weight. My hooves brushed against the clouds as I began to move. I turned around, my back to the colorful flying ponies. I took one last longing glance before flying away. I awoke in a coughing fit, violent enough that Calamity crushed me to him to keep me from jerking out of his forelegs. Below us, we were passing over part of the fire brigade moving through an already burned part of the forest. I watched as a unicorn marched before the wing of Red-Eyes Griffins, her horns glowing. The glow spread out over the ground in front of her, lighting up a large swath of blackened forest floor. A moment later, the ground churned, tearing itself apart. The griffins swept forward with their flamethrowers, setting ablaze the tangles of blue vines that the unicorn's tilling spell had uncovered. "Whoa there, little Pip," Calamity comforted. "You okay there, girl?"
"Yeah, sorry about that,"
I apologized, bringing my levitating field back up around me.
"Dozed off."
"Yeah, I reckon when we get on board, we're gonna find a place to lay low, and you're gonna take a nap."
Ahead of us, the overcast loomed closer. We would be on it within a few minutes.
"You might only get a couple of hours, but that's a couple of hours better than none."
I turned on my advanced stealth buck. We were getting close enough that all of us needed to be invisible. Reggie and Calamity followed suit, donning the hoods of their zebra stealth cloaks. A strange silhouette shot out of the sky. A dark figure the size and shape of a pony, but with leathery bat-like wings that reminded me strongly of Xanath and her flying amulet, and impacted one of the raptors like a bullet.
"What the hells was that?"
Reddy's voice blurted.
"Either you see that too?"
The raptor began to veer off, moving away from the Thunderhead. I floated my ear bloom into my ear, and quickly sought out the Enclave's military channel.
"Been breached. I repeat, we have unknown hostiles aboard."
The voice from the raptor's communications officer sounded professional, unconcerned, even bored.
"Disengaging from position to deal with the intruders."
The overcast was still hours away from the cathedral, and attacks were already starting. I had no doubt that Red Eye was behind this attack, but something wasn't right. Sending a single creature against them wasn't going to stop them. It wouldn't even slow them down. And that meant it wasn't intended to.
"Acknowledge, Raptor Lenticular. Rendezvous with the target as soon as you've exterminated the infestation."
I suspected, rather, that Red Eye was just looking to soften up the Enclave a bit before pulling whatever big surprise he had hidden beneath his cloak.
Lenticular to Overcast.
This time, the officer's voice sounded panicked.
It's the demon. I repeat, the demon is on board.
The what now?
Reggie started to say something, but I waved a hoof for her to be quiet, which, in retrospect, was really silly since I was invisible, my attention fully on the conversation in my earbloom.
Overcast Lenticular, please confirm. Are you reporting that the monster which downed the Mammatus is...
The officer aboard the Overcast never got to finish his question, much less get an answer. A loud whine tore my eardrum, and the Enclave's inter-warship military channel became deaf. I bucked in Calamity's grip, my vision going red as agony tore through my brain and took hold of my horn. I quickly shut off my Pip-Legs radio, gasping and wiping blood from my eyes. Whatever the hell had just made its way aboard the Lenticular had just infected the military channel with the Canterlot signal. By Luna's mane. We had run into corrupted broadcasters in Zebratown. Even with Canterlot itself gone, any broadcaster that survived would still create a zone of malignant noise. Hell, still had one of those in my saddlebags. It had never occurred to me that some pony might think to use one of those devices to actually broadcast across a normal channel. Fortunately for the Enclave, all they had to do was survive to turn their radios off. But this meant that they were flying into battle against Red Eye's forces without communications. The battle was engaged. The burning in my hoof consumed my entire left hind leg before fading dully. My leg felt stiff and swollen, but the worst seemed to be over. The plant spike poison was far from lethal, at least not to anything larger than a rabbit, perhaps. Aside from the earlier plant's attack, the stealth mission seemed to be going perfectly. No pony shot at us as we drew close behind the Overcast. All the Thunderhead's dangerous magical weapons were pointing forward. We just needed to fly up to a hatch, pick the lock, and slip inside. And with Calamity's knowledge of the Thunderheads, we found a hatch in no time. I cursed the Enclave, the Pegasi, and the entire concept of wings the moment I saw it. Fucking cloud locks. "Ain't gonna be able to pick this one," Calamity said, his voice muffled. I wasn't sure if he was talking about himself or me. Probably both.
"Rainbow,"
I called out as loudly as I dared, this close to the Overcast.
"Dash,"
came the muffled response. Unlike Stealthbucks, the zebra cloak's dampened sound. It was impossible to tell where Reggie was, but at least she was close.
"Okay, backup plan,"
Calamity announced, just loud enough for Reggie, we hoped, to hear. We couldn't actually be sure where the Griffin was, and had already resorted to call response navigating. I had begun to regret not using rope to tie each other together.
"We gotta get up above this thing, near one of the landing bays, and wait for some pony to open a door."
With that, Calamity beat his wings, drawing us higher. Below us, the hatch hissed open.
"You coming?"
the muffled voice of a griffin asked. I tried to exchange a look with Calamity, and, of course, that totally failed.
"Honestly, the way you two act, you'd think Little Pip is the only person in the entire wasteland who can pick a lock."
We were inside the corridors of the Overcast, the thrumming of its thunderclouds rumbling against the hull. The vibration mixed with the hum of the lights, the hum seeming deeper here than in the Raptor Pyrocumulus or inside the stables. More ominous. But that could have just been my imagination. The voices of Pegasus ponies were omnipresent in all but the most isolated passageways. The corridors were painted black, making the lights seem to provide stunted illumination. Colored stripes ran down the middle of the walls like an abbreviated rainbow, the paint reflecting the light that the rest of the walls absorbed, making them seem to glow. The colored lines weren't solid, but had slanted breaks, and they would change, dropping away or being added as we moved through the ship. I gleaned that they were some sort of color-coded guidance strips that would tell an Enclave Pegasus if the hallway they were in would take them to the section of the massive ship that they wanted. There were monitors placed at intervals along the wall, each glowing with the Enclave symbol, an emblem of the clouds and wings with a pair of eyes gazing out from the shelter of an arch, green and purple on black. We moved quietly, holding each other by the tails,
Calamity taking the lead. My hind leg made walking unpleasant and difficult. Fortunately, sneaking through the bowels of the overcast didn't require me to run. I felt awkward and uncomfortably warm with Regina Grimfeathers biting my tail. I tried to focus forward, and immediately regretted it. It tasted like Calamity hadn't washed his tail in weeks. I knew that couldn't actually be true. Velvet Remedy would never stand for it. But that didn't change anything. I fought a slowly losing battle against my gag reflex. I survived about 5 minutes and 2 floors, waiting until we reached a secluded stairwell before I had to spit my friend's tail out and dry heave in a corner. I felt Regina spit out my own tail, snarking. Yeah, like yours was a picnic. If I was beginning to understand the overcast guidance scheme, the striping that flanked the metal stairs suggested we were midway between the barracks and the overcast medical bay, with a longer path towards the officers' quarters. I would have expected such a hallway to be in heavy use, but it was utterly empty. Hang on there, little Pip, Calamity ordered. I'll go round us up some Enclave armor. The barracks are on the floor below, opposite the rec center. We had skirted what Calamity referred to as the rec center on our way by the stairwell, getting a good look at it through a set of large observation windows. It was a large 3-story open room filled with mares and stallions exercising, lifting weights, and even flying through obstacle hoops, all out of armor and uniform. A third of the room was at a cloud ball court, and there had been nearly 2 dozen sweaty Enclave mares and stallions faced off in a friendly game. I had to admit, watching some of those mares temporarily distracted me from the concentrated disgusting in my mouth. It made sense that the ponies down there had suits of armor nearby, but...
Alone? Into a barracks? Reggie asked, echoing my concern before I had fully formed it.
But then she added,
How about we just wait for the next Enclave bastard to come down these stairs and take him out? I'll use Cage's knives. Real quick and quiet.
No, I insisted, taken aback. Fighting the Enclave in a battle was one thing. But that? That was murder.
My brother needs to be put down, yes, Calamity said sternly. But most of these ponies ain't evil. They're just following orders. We ain't killing any pony we don't have to.
None of these ponies are innocent, Reggie hissed.
Some of these ponies might be, Calamity countered. I don't recall the Overcast getting directly involved in the fighting anywhere yet.
That's not how we do things, I added, only for Reggie to scoff.
Oh, please, Reggie repudiated. I'm a child of God, remember? I know all about what you did at Shattered Hoof. You're an assassin when it suits your cause.
I flinched. I really, really didn't want to think of myself that way. But Regina was right, and I deserved the sucker punch to my self-image to knock me off my pedestal. Still mentally smarting, I changed tactic. Okay, fine, you're right. But so is Calamity. We've already seen crew rebellions. There's a chance that many of these ponies would side with us, giving half a chance and a touch of perspective.
But they sure as hell won't if you start slitting their throats in the stairwell.
Reggie seemed to accept this. She fell silent. I moved amongst a few Enclave crates stored beneath the stairwell and laid down, beginning to drift to sleep. Calamity, I assumed, moved off to fetch the armor. I couldn't really tell, but it was a safe assumption. But either way, he and Regina weren't arguing or bringing up unpleasant points of morality anymore. Peace and quiet. Time for a nap. Wait. Too quiet.
Rainbow, I whispered.
Dash. I woke up when Calamity returned with the Enclave armor and, if I were to guess, most of the medical bay.
Went smoothly, he said, slipping off the zebra stealth cloak and passing it to me.
I reached out for it and realized I could see my arm. The MG Stealth Buck 2 had drained while I slept. Fortunately, no pony, or at least no pony observant, had used the stairwell since then.
Wait. How long was I out?
long enough for him to make a few trips," Reggie teased from someplace nearby. "Figured we ought to let you get some sleep." Reggie shifted her attention to Calamity. "Don't you think your brother's going to notice when half of his damn ship is missing?"
I would have sworn one of the goddesses had a love of ironic timing. Before Calamity could answer, we heard a door open several floors above us. Music flooded into the stairwell, hidden speakers coming alive at their entrance, pouring haunting orchestral music with an exquisite cello performance at its centerpiece.
"Oh, hell," Calamity moaned softly. "It's autumn."
At my querying look, he explained.
"Who else'd have the whole ship rigged to pipe classical music wherever he goes?"
I noticed that he positioned himself, wings spread, so that he could feel if Reggie tried to pass him. I wasn't sure if he was intending to stop the Griffin, or just wanted forewarning. Voices echoed down the stairwell.
"Again, sir, my deepest apologies," the mayor said, almost whining. "I still can't understand how that monster got past us."
"Teleportation, no doubt," Autumn Leaf replied, his tone hard. "Two of those beasts that tried to breach Navarro a few years back were teleporters," he added. "And that little spell proved no help to either of them."
"Sir, you know this is a trap,"
Amara's voice was saying.
"Of course it's a trap,"
a stallion's voice replied, smooth as glass. Unlike Calamity's other brothers, there was no trace of his family's accent. "Red Eye is calling me out. There is simply no other explanation for that." Autumn Lee's voice twisted into a snarl.
"Mental violation."
My head was spinning. Unless I had gravely misinterpreted what I was hearing, I hadn't been the only one that Red Eye's alicorns had tested with that vile mental rape. Autumn Leaf sternly announced,
"I do not intend to disappoint him."
I now understood what had pushed Autumn Leaf to jump the whistle.
"Sir,"
the mayor pleaded, their voices drawing closer,
"with all due respect, I believe it will be a grave error for you to enter the battle yourself like this."
"I don't doubt it," responded the Pegasus, who had brought so much harm and devastation and suffering to the equestrian wasteland.
"But there are some transgressions that absolutely require personal reckoning."
I heard another door open above us.
"If I die," Colonel Autumn Leaf instructed, "or if I am taken hostage, you have your orders."
His voice receded as the two ponies walked away. I barely caught him add,
"Besides, Red Eye is not going to see this coming."
The door slid shut. When it closed, the virtual classical orchestra evaporated, plunging the stairwell into an oppressive silence.
"Rainbow?"
I asked cautiously. There was no dash. I listened to my earbloom as I drank another of the healing potions Calamity had pilfered, blinking away blood-tinged tears. My headache and horn ache receded, then disappeared completely. At least we were going into this magically restored to complete health. Even the swelling in my leg was almost completely gone. Canterlot's static from the Laptor lenticular was still flooding the Enclave inter-warship channel. The fact that the lenticular had managed to neither shut down its comm array nor get far enough away for the overcast to be outside its range suggested that the Enclave aboard had not been successful in dealing with the demon. I was willing to bet that at least one of the other raptors was trying to hunt the lenticular down, but without communications, there was no easy way for them to coordinate efforts. I pictured Enclave soldiers flying between ships, relaying messages. I had switched away from the channel as soon as I had heard it, but the concentrated blast of Canterlot static had still taken its toll. Now, I was switching through the other transmissions, the Enclave's Hellhound control broadcast, the intra-ship classical music station, all cello all the time, Red Eye's broadcast, straight from the cathedral, sans towers, and thus free of the Enclave takeover, and, finally, the normal wasteland broadcast, all Enclave, almost all the time. Still, no sign or sound of Reggie. It had been 15 minutes.
I got a few ice-cold sparkle colas in the rucksack over there.
Calamity pointed.
That's almost as good as a couple hours of sleep, I reckon.
He turned to the Enclave crates under the stairs, opening the first unlocked one.
Hoo-hoo-hoo, he whistled. Grenades.
I began to dig through the sack in question as the dour tones of fancy horns and kettle drums played in my ears.
You really need a pit buck, I whispered to Calamity with a chuckle.
In his kleptomaniac enthusiasm, he had dumped the contents of who knew how many medical boxes and Enclave crates into his saddlebags, and even more into his military rucksacks.
If only for the inventory sorter.
The song on the radio changed. The new one was heavy on the string section.
Oh, shoot,
Calamity said, face-hoofing his armor-clad hoof against his helmet with a thunk.
The armor's got one of those.
Clearly, it had been a while since he'd properly used Enclave armor. The few times I'd seen him use his own suit, with the exception of a brief stint in Old Olne, he'd always had the helmet off. I smirked, about to say something witty, when I found the ice-cold Sparkle Cola. And beside it, a couple tins of Mintals. I stared, feeling a moment of cold shock.
Calamity,
I asked, trying to sound casual.
Did you even look at the stuff you were taking?
Nope,
he said. I could almost feel his grin through the helmet. He had no idea what I'd just seen.
Reckon if Autumn wants it, best I have it.
Right. I looked back into the rucksack, my mind insisting on replaying the taste of party time Mintals, the feelings of competence and intelligence, the certainty. I took the ice-cold Sparkle Cola in my teeth and telekinetically zipped the rucksack shut, the little pony in my head echoing Calamity.
Nope.
I got to mentally celebrate my little victory for about a minute before I heard a door open below us. A pair of lightly armed Enclave officers strode by, trotting up the stairs. Calamity whisked his scorpion-like armored tail around in a salute. One of the officers saluted back. I watched them disappear up the metal stairs, following the line that led towards the officers' quarters without even noticing it. Once they were well away, I shifted my attention back to Calamity.
Got a question for you,
I said as I opened the frosty Sparkle Cola, enjoying the little fizzy hiss it made and the aroma of carrots and colaness.
Go ahead, he said,
alleviating another crate of its cargo, which in this case included some pony's Wing Boner magazine collection, 3 hot plates, 17 pre-war bits, and a copy of the pre-war book Give Peas a Chance, The Vegetarian's Guide to Cooking.
Shoot.
Remembering Reggie's snide remark about carrying healing potions, I started to telekinetically fill my saddlebags with a healthy supply from the rucksack.
What kinds of defenses does the Enclave have around the SPP central hub?
I questioned, before tipping back the cola and taking a swig.
Yay. Carrots.
I knew that the hub itself had defenses, the most significant being the shield surrounding the entire structure. But those were not under the Enclave's control. The Single Pegasus Project was the core of the Enclave's grip on the heavens. Even if no pony could get inside the central hub, I had to assume the Enclave had guards, or at least some kind of warning system.
You mean in Navarro?
Calamity asked. I almost choked on the taste of fizzy carrots. The healing potion I'd been levitating hit the floor.
Navarro?
I asked back, slowly, setting the cola safely in one of the Enclave crates.
Son of a...
Calamity nickered, giving a stomp.
That's your plan, huh? He asked, spreading his wings. You'll want to take on the Enclave's biggest military base. Oh, fuck. The base with the Thunderhead permanently parked overhead. Fuckity fuck. The base where my father serves as a drill sergeant.
And while Luna shoved my cunt full of moon rocks and called me home, the Enclave had built a whole damn base around it.
Stealth mission? He asked, his voice betraying the ludicrousness of my idea. Or were you just planning on a full frontal assault?
I opened my muzzle to reply, but all that came out was a squeak.
Yep, this is going to be barrels of fun.
He would have said more, but the sound of another door opening prompted him to clam up. We both waited, listening, striving to hear whether or not the pony or ponies who had just entered the stairwell were headed our way. Our ears were greeted with silence. Moments later, we heard Reggie's muffled hiss.
Dash!
Calamity's wings drooped.
My brother?
He asked, hesitating to speak further.
Still alive, I'm afraid, Reggie admitted. Sorry, I got distracted.
Distracted?
I found they've got prisoners here, Reggie explained. Any pony up to breaking them free?
Calamity chuckled.
Welcome to the team.
One Pegasus in Enclave armor, on a ship full of Enclave Pegasi, flanked by two invisible and virtually inaudible companions. If we couldn't pull this off, we didn't deserve to win. The Enclave music in my earbloom had changed again. This one sounded like a dirge.
Howdy, partner.
Calamity called out jovially as he trotted up to a mare at the guard station outside the ship's brig.
I so wanted to face off. Bored yet?
Hover and identify,
the guard Pegasus ordered rotely.
Windshear, Calamity lied swiftly. Superior communications officer, transferred from the Glorious Dawn last week.
That was a dangerous gamble. If the mayor knew about the colonel's family, using his brother's name and rank would give his story a sense of legitimacy. After all, it was understandable that Colonel Autumn Leaf might want his brothers on his ship for this operation, and Calamity's accent lent credence to the claim. But would she buy a superior communications officer wearing Enclave armor rather than an officer's uniform? I had to trust Calamity's instincts and Enclave experience on that. However, if she knew what Autumn Leaf's brother looked like, then not only would any glimpse beneath that armor tell her that Calamity was lying, but she would know his palette matched one of Autumn's other brothers, the one who was branded a traitor, the one that the Enclave was to kill on sight. Calamity's ruse could put the mayor in the perfect frame of mind to guess his actual identity.
Superior communications officer, huh?
The mayor asked, immediately rendering my worries pointless.
So maybe you can tell me what the hay is going on with Raptor Lenticular.
She gave Calamity an exasperated look.
I mean, we got the ship's tag, right? And even if the infiltrators manage to take it out, we've got the tags for every pony in a suit of armor on board. Why don't we just find the damn raptor and blow it out of the sky?
'Cause we got raptors to spare, right?
Calamity chided as he trotted up to the mare.
The ship ain't turned around to attack us yet, and I reckon that means there's still hope our forces will keep it under control. As for tracking it down, my bits are on the infiltrators not actually having the channel for our communications.
The control for the door had a cloud interface and required a code. Reggie and I had teamed up to hack it, her talons and my savvy, while Calamity kept the guard mare busy. He shook his carapace-helmeted head.
Nope. Much more likely they're blasting that necro-noise broadband, flooding out every signal coming from the lenticular, jamming the tags.
Calamity whinnied.
Hell, that might be the whole point, and screwing up our comms is just icing on the cupcake.
The password was Fluffykins. I wasn't quite sure what to think about that.
So is the demon really, well, a demon? The mayor asked. I heard rumor that it's a monster released from hell by the Balefire bombs.
I don't believe in no demons, Calamity replied. No more than I believe in goddesses. Way I see it, we don't need outside forces to blame for making the world a shittier place. We do that well enough by our own hooves.
I positioned myself behind the mare and slipped off my hood, giving Calamity a signal. Reggie entered the code while Calamity kept the guard's attention. There was the faintest whir as the lock cycled. Our Pegasus friend moved up to the mare, speaking more loudly to cover the sound.
I'm sure this so-called demon ain't nothing more than a pony, he said in a tone that suggested what he was saying was more than just his opinion.
It was the Enclave line, and the mayor was expected to believe it.
or just some monster twisted up by the byproducts of the war.
Reggie and I slid inside the brig. Before us was a corridor of cells, 2 floors high, each cell behind a glowing blue force field, identical to the magical energy cages the Enclave had thrown Ditsy-Doo, Calamity, and me into less than a week ago. The sound of weeping drifted through the air. Most of the cells were empty. Most. There were ponies here. Not just bucks and mares, but foals, too. Some prisoners paced in their cells, others huddled on hard metal cots. They were from the wasteland. They looked filthy compared to the stark cleanliness of the Enclave vessel. I recoiled as I found the source of the crying, a mare cradling a foal, the colt's body limp in her hooves, having died in captivity. There were 2 guards inside, standing at a rear airlock, and they both reacted to the door.
"Thought I heard something," one of them said as they moved from their positions, looking about.
I shifted, moving out of the way as one passed me, his tail swishing inches from me. Part of me wanted to draw out little Macintosh and shoot him in the head, point blank. He deserved no less. But the noise could draw the whole ship down on us. I wished I had Velvet Remedy with her anesthetic spell with us, or Life Bloom, or even Zenith with her paralyzing hoof strikes. In their absence, I did the next best thing. My horn glowed, giving away my position, as I wrapped my telekinesis around their necks and squeezed until they stopped struggling. Reggie pulled back her hood and gave one of the limp guards a kick.
"Help me disable these energy fields."
I pulled mine off too, choosing to have faith that we could trust the prisoners not to give us away, and moved to the control terminal for the cells. As we began to work, I couldn't help but comment.
"If it makes any difference, I'm proud of you. You chose to help those ponies over your revenge."
Regina Grimfeather squawked a laugh.
"Ain't your approval I'm aiming for, but thanks anywho."
At my curious look, she sighed.
"Cages. Wherever my brother is now, I want his approval. And this is what I think he'd want me to do, what I think he'd do in my place."
My mind flashed to the young male griffin, buying a bent tin can from Silverbell just to make her happy.
"I think you're right," I offered. "I mean, I know I didn't know him long, but from what I did see of him, yeah, he would."
Reggie nodded.
"Revenge ain't worth nothing if I dishonor his memory in the process."
She looked at me, a small tear in one eye.
"He was always wanting to do stuff like this, you know? Me too, of course," she hastily added. "But I wanted to be the hero. He just wanted to make something better of the Griffin's role in Equestria."
She smiled bleakly.
"Sometimes I think he took Stern and her lot as a personal affront, and wanted to try to balance things out."
"You!" one of the prisoners called out.
I rotated towards the voice and saw Tracker. The Jade Pegasus slammed his forehooves against the energy field, ignoring the feedback.
"This isn't how things are supposed to be. Get out while you still can, before they get you too."
"Sure, just as soon as we get you guys out,"
I said with a determined smile. More ponies were getting up, moving to the edges of the magical barriers, staring at Reggie and me with mixed expressions of hope and disbelief.
"Welcome to your rescue."
The sound of klaxons filled the brig. I spun to Reggie, eyes wide, certain that some pony had triggered the alarm, and we were about to be overwhelmed by Enclave soldiers. Then, we felt the first dull thuds vibrating through the floor. The brig was close to the overcast exterior. I had a terrible inkling that the airlock was for easy, high-altitude disposal of prisoners, and we could feel the impacts of what had to be Cathedral's anti-aircraft cannons. Reggie returned my gaze.
"We're here."
I had never seen such disciplined and orderly chaos as the Enclave mobile siege platform in the heat of battle. Every Pegasus knew where to go, what to do, and they were doing it rapidly under the barked orders of their commanders. With the military channel down, officers had taken wing, brushing the ceilings with the tips of their feathers as they shouted down to the troops and across the ship to each other.
No Pony questioned the apparently lone Enclave soldier moving with purpose through the corridors and out into one of the overcast hangar bays, laden down with rucksacks.
"Where to, little Pip?" Calamity asked.
"You'll like this," I replied from beneath the zebra cloak. "You're gonna steal one of the Enclave sky tanks."
"Good."
I could almost hear the grin breaking across his face.
"The Enclave owes us for the Sky Bandit."
"There's an exterior airlock. We need to pull up to it once we're free of the ship," Reggie added. "Got some extra passengers to take aboard."
The entire ship flooded with the tense sound of brass, drums, and violins, the heavier classical music replaced by the stirring battle anthem Flight of the Shadow Bolts.
"This is it, ponies," the voice of Colonel Autumn Leaf boomed over the music. "This is the moment all your training and all your experience has prepared you for. This is the battle you were born for. It's time to separate the Pegasi from the Griffins. It's time to kick Red Eye's ass and teach him the cross in the Enclave, murdering our brothers and sisters, was his ultimate folly.
We fight in the name of every Pegasus ignominiously massacred in the Splendid Valley sneak attack." The monitors along each wall came to life. The Enclave emblem replaced by a slowly scrolling list of names. Every Pegasus killed by the Splendid Valley Balefire Bomb. I forced myself not to look, not to read each name. I knew I should. I was responsible. But if I did, I also knew that I wouldn't be able to go on.
"We fight in the name of our loved ones, our home, and our Enclave."
As we made our way across the hangar deck towards one of the black and green armored tanks, the flight of the Shadow Bolts began to crescendo. The hangar door growled open to the smoky yellow sky. Explosions of black smoke pockmarked the haze as anti-aircraft shells filled the sky. A squad of Pegasi in black carapace armor shot past the opening and battled with a wing of dark green shield-protected alicorns. I could hear the sounds of magical energy discharges and automatic gunfire from the world below mixing into a nerve-wracking din. The first sky tanks and bombing chariots took off, flying out of the throat of the ship and into the heart of the war. Calamity opened the largest sky tank we could find, one with multiple plasma cannons, the kind like the one Calamity had shot Topaz with, too big for even a battle saddle, and space for a dozen armored soldiers. He pushed himself to the front, strapping himself into the flight harness while Reggie and I took up places in the back. I noted the name stenciled onto the side of the sky tank just before I climbed aboard. Tortoise. A pair of Enclave soldiers came trotting up to the back of the Tortoise, their helmets and their muzzles. They had seen Calamity strapping in and were expecting a ride. Reggie tossed back her hood, becoming visible for just a moment, grinning as I closed the door on them.
"Sorry, Bucks, this one's taken."
Their stunned expressions were priceless.
"Go now,"
I told Calamity, tossing back my own hood the moment the door was shut. I looked over the door, the pony in my head panicking as I realized I had no idea how to lock it.
"Now. Now is good. Go now."
I didn't want to give the $2 time to recover, open the door, and gun us down. Calamity spread his wings inside the armored enclosure of the Tortoise's cockpit, pumping twice, and I felt the tank lift from the hangar floor. A moment later, we were shooting out the hangar door, the horizontal slit windows of the Tortoise glowing with the sickly golden light of Everfree's dawn. Beneath us was a massive complex of metal, stone, and brown concrete, the cathedral. High in its center rose an airy Gothic structure of steepled roofs, flying buttresses, and rosy stained glass. Ringing out around it was a heavily fortified castle, thick walls, towers, battlements. Tower strongholds held anti-aircraft guns, identical to the ones that had once protected Friendship City. There was even a moat, and I could see the shadow of something the size of 3 ponies swimming about in it. Beyond the castle's outer walls and the moat, the Everfree forest was nothing but blackened ash and severed stumps for at least a mile in every direction. A deep gorge knifed through the land on 3 sides, spanned by only a single fortress-like bridge. The scorched land was filled with ponies. Not just dozens, not just hundreds,
Thousands of ponies, wearing Red-Eye's colors, were engaging the Enclave forces in a ferocious battle. Red-Eye's troops fought from trenches and pillboxes. More soldiers lined the walls of the castle, pouring bullets into the sky. Red-Eye's alicorns and griffins met the Pegasi in the skies. It still seemed like a horribly lopsided battle. Bombing wagons rained high explosives down on the fortress from high above, far enough to be out of range. The raptors alone could level the cathedral with concentrated fire. Goddesses knew what the overcast itself could do. Two of the raptors from the overcast had joined four more, encircling the cathedral, bombarding it with heavy plasma fire. I assumed the third raptor was busy hunting Raptor Lenticular. Three of the raptors were showing signs of damage from the shelling. One of them was smoking badly and had begun to cant, drifting out of position. Calamity circled us around, deftly keeping us out of the line of heavy fire. We drew up to the brig airlock. Tracker had already opened it, waiting for us. I opened the door of the Tortoise as Calamity backed us up to the overcast. The Thunderhead siege platform was barely moving now. Jumping from it to our sky tank would be more nerve-wracking than actually dangerous. I moved into position to help them. Regina climbed into the seat of one of the plasma cannons. The first pony, a light gray mare with a shockingly purple mane, moved up to the edge of the airlock. She gulped, her knees shaking, her brow beating with the effort not to look down.
"It's okay," I coaxed. "You can do it."
Our attention, and the attention of every pony in the battle, was suddenly wrenched downwards by a horrific equestria-shaking bellow. Something huge, dark, and horrifying rose up from the cathedral, a black and monstrous shape against the smoke-filtered sun. Great angry red eyes poured hatred down on us as it brutalized the air with massive leathery wings. Then, it moved towards one of the raptors, bellowing balefire. As it moved, I could make out pony-sized claws and spines, and the two-tone green of its scales, marred deeply by scars that looked more surgical than battle-borne. I glimpsed at an odd mechanical glow coming from inside one of the wounds, which hadn't fully healed. There was a dragon in the Everfree Forest. And not just any dragon, the Luna fucking granddaddy of all dragons. An ancient dragon so old it must have already been a huge, gigantic, terrifying, enormous, totally all-grown-up dragon back when Spike was only a baby. And it was fighting on Red-Eye's side. The dragon roared again, grasping the raptor in its claws as three of the others turned their weapons towards it. Dragon killers, Calamity had called them. Well, this was their chance to prove themselves worthy of that title. The dragon blasted the captive raptor with choking black smoke, then howled as the other raptors lanced it with bright pastel beams of magical energy. It flicked its tail, producing massive spikes that glowed with eldritch energy, and lashed out at one of the attacking raptors, cutting deep grooves in its forward armor. My jaw hit the floor of the Tortoise. Those spikes were magically enhanced. I stared at the dragon's unnatural glowing red eyes, and knew immediately what they reminded me of.
Red Eye, cybernetically enhanced, a dragon.
I blinked, the little pony in my head petrified, then spun.
Okay, that's it. We're getting down there right now, I called out,
wrapping the escaping prisoner ponies in my magic and floating them unceremoniously into the Tortoise.
Calamity, get us the fuck out of this sky.
I closed the door, apologizing to the prisoners as I pulled myself into another of the plasma cannon chairs. The chair and controls were made for a larger pony, and I had about as much skill with magical energy weapons as I did with sword fighting. But as long as I didn't manage to shoot the damn tank we were in, I figured even I could help. Reggie was already firing, taking shots at the other sky tanks and Enclave bombing chariots. The high-pitched yelp of her plasma cannon was making my ears hurt.
Oh yeah!
Reggie shouted over the cacophony as one of her shots turned an Enclave bombing wagon into a cascading explosion of rainbow pyrotechnics. She was already swinging towards her next target before the fireworks had subsided.
I love me this turtle.
Tortoise,
I corrected as I linked my pip leg into the turret, downloading the sky tank's tag and maximizing the value of my targeting spell.
Yeah, whatever, she said with a dismissive wave of her wing. Hey, Calamity, can we keep it?
Her next three shots took out two Carapace-armored Enclave Pegasi, freeing up a very surprised-looking Alicorn. Some of Red-Eye's troops along the cathedral wall opened fire on the Tortoise as Calamity brought us close. I gasped in dismay as two of the escapees crumbled, dead, crimson flowers bursting across their bodies. Several of the other escapees screamed. The more level-headed ponies stepped in, trying to prevent a panic. Tracker belted out a command, ordering everyone to lay flat on the floor and make themselves as small a target as possible. I floated open one of the rucksacks filled with medical supplies and looked around the interior of the tank. The bullets hadn't penetrated the tank's armor so much as ignored it completely. There weren't even bullet holes. Red Eye's troops were using bullets enchanted with an armor bypass. I turned my plasma cannon on the troops along the wall, trying to clear a path for us to land without losing any more ponies. Suddenly, between that and the dragon, this battle was looking a whole lot less lopsided. The dragon roared overhead,